Since you mentioned it again, without showing my response to it, let me take up where I left off last time. Let me explain what I said would fit better and all that. What I'm calling the consistency argument in verses 5 and 6, what it says in verse 5 is if the woman is not covered, that is even all one as if she were shaven. I would understand it to mean it's just as bad as. So he's using a consistency argument. You know this is wrong, shaven. Therefore, you ought to be covered when you pray. Okay, and the same thing happens, I believe, with shorter shaving, verse 6. I think Mr. Jenkins disagreed. That's what we're calling the consistency argument. I think both positions will fit the consistency argument. In other words, Paul could be saying, because they agreed that shaving was wrong on a woman, Paul could be saying, you need to be covered with a veil when you pray. And if you don't, that's just as bad as if you were shaving. Okay, or Paul could be saying, you don't need to cut your hair short, is Mr. Jenkins' position. Because if you do, that's just as bad as if you were shaving. They already recognized that shaving was wrong. But suppose they didn't recognize that cutting it short was wrong. I think either position will fit that. So when I said verses 5 and 6 don't prove my position, I said the consistency argument made by Paul in verses 5 and 6 does not prove my position. Either one of our positions will fit that. There is something in verse 5, though, that will fit my position, and that is the phrase prayer and prophecy. Now, in my last speech, I likened it to Jeremiah 13:23a, where you had the illustration, can the Ethiopian change his skin or the leopard his spots? I believe this is an illustration given by inspired Jeremiah to illustrate this truth that I learned in the B part of the verse. These two facts, in my opinion, illustrate how difficult it is for those that are quoting the verse that are accustomed to do evil to change and do good. That's what they're doing. And I think he's using this illustration to help the reader of his book understand that. No, I think also that this illustration would illustrate this, too. And Hartshell Primitive Baptist would bring that up. This illustration, he thinks, proves that the non-elect are born in sin and cannot change. Well, the Ethiopian is born with his skin color, and the leopard is born with his spots. But see, this is just an illustration. The writer started out with this truth, and he gave the illustration to help them understand the truth. He didn't do this. I'm going to think of an illustration, and whatever the reader thinks is the best interpretation of the illustration, that'll be the truth of the matter. Now, he started with the truth, and he illustrated it, okay? The fact that the illustration can illustrate other things is just coincidental. And now apply this to 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5 and 6. I believe he started with the truth that the veil needed to be worn when a woman prayed or prophesied. He made an argument. That's just as bad as if she'd shave her hair off, okay? The fact that his position will fit that argument is just coincidental. It does not prove his position, the fact that it will fit it, because it fits mine too. Either position will fit it. Now we have to understand from other things in the scripture which position is the one that Paul is arguing for. Either position will fit the argument. That was my whole point on that. Okay, Tommy, lower that down. Let me put up the next one. Mr. Jenkins, in telling why the skinny sentence didn't make sense, and the long hair sentence, or Karen had long hair right by it, didn't make sense, said, well, a fat person can't get skinny in time for a ball game. But a person that has long hair can cut her hair and make it short, do that type of ball game. But Mr. Jenkins, that won't work. Because watch this. What about a woman that has short hair? Can she make it long in time for her next spring? She can't she? You see that? That's the point I'm getting at. Put up number 7, Tommy. I believe we have it up here. And this chart will illustrate that. That shows that this thing is done fornication. The difference between the covering of 1 Corinthians 11:5 and the covering of 1 Corinthians 11:15 is illustrated by the following two questions about a woman named Betty who prayed asking for blessings in the morning time, and prays against blessings in the evening. Would it be possible for Betty to be covered with an artificial veil during her morning prayer, cease to be covered with this artificial veil during the afternoon as she worked around the house, and to be covered again with this artificial veil during her evening prayer? I've asked Mr. Jenkins this question, and he answered yes to that question. But, on the other hand, would it be possible for Betty to be covered with her long hair, 1 Corinthians 11:15, during her morning prayer, cease to be covered with her long hair during the afternoon as she worked around the house, and be covered again with her long hair during her evening prayer? And both Mr. Jenkins and I answer that question, no. You see, this is what I'm talking about for the occasion. Yes, a woman with long hair could cut her hair, but she couldn't get it back to long again in time for a prayer, could she? Therefore, she can't have long hair just for the occasion. Okay? He mentioned in connection with this, at least I would think it is, that what about when the woman goes to granddaddy, she can have long hair, but the next day she can cut it off and get to Aunt Martha's and have short hair. That's right, Mr. Jenkins. The question is, could she have long hair again in time to go to Uncle Charlie the next day? That's what I'm pointing out. She couldn't. So you left off that part. Then he brought up the illustration of a girl he knew that had short hair. Mr. Jenkins talked to her, and 3 months later, she had longer hair than what she had before. So in other words, according to 1 Peter 11 verse 5 shows that this covering needs to be done for this occasion. She couldn't have prayed for 3 months until she got that long hair. Is that what you're saying? You see, that's, as he was, I don't want to use that word. That doesn't make any sense. He knows that the woman was not going to go 3 months without prayer. That wouldn't be right. And so you can see by that, that long hair was not put on for the occasion of prayer, but it took 3 months to get, in Mr. Jenkins' opinion, long hair. Then put up number 63, Tommy. Okay. It makes it harder on me because when I have to turn here and I can't read it off the projector. He mentioned the point that I had admitted or something that pray does not indicate the only time. That's right. But you're missing the point. I'm not saying that the phrase, praying or prophesying, indicates by itself that that's the only time that a woman has to be covered. You're missing the point. Now, I will go to my chart 63. Like you said, it's not up there, but I'm going to look at Mark 11:25. Everybody turn to Mark 11:25 and get you to see the point. You said that I said that Mark 11:25, the forgiveness was not a temporary thing. No, I didn't say that. It is temporary. You forgive on a temporary basis. You forgive when a person repents. And when a person does not repent, by the way, you look in Luke 17:3 to see proof of that, you do not forgive. And Mark 11:25 proves that you forgive, or could prove, if we needed it, that you, forgiveness is a thing you can do on an occasion, and you cannot do it on another occasion. As a matter of fact, it's permissible, not only permissible to not do it on another occasion, sometimes it's commanded. If they won't repent, you cannot forgive them. Okay? But even if you had to forgive all the time, I mean, just even if they repented or not, forgiveness is still something that is possible to turn on and off. You can do it on occasion. Let's suppose that you had to forgive all the time, and that's what God requires. You don't have to do it that way. You could forgive for this occasion and not forgive for that occasion. Now, maybe it'd be wrong, but it still could be done on occasion. When the book in Mark 11:25 says that when you stand praying, forgive, that proves the fact that it said when you stand praying on that occasion, that it's possible to forgive on an occasion, like when you stand praying, and not forgive on another occasion, like when you're not praying. Now, the truth of the matter is you're supposed to forgive every time a person repents. Matthew 18 shows that. Even if you repent 70 times 7, when he repents, you forgive him. But forgiveness is done on occasion. Mark 11:25 proves that. Just like 1 Corinthians 11 verse 5, the phrase praying or prophesying, proves the covering there can be done on an occasion. But long hair cannot be done on an occasion. And that's why 1 Corinthians 11 5, if you stick the long hair in there, is not parallel to Mark 11:25. Then Mr. Jenkins says, I'm dealing the whole case with the word when or while. Everybody turn to 1 Corinthians 11 verse 5. It is true that in the King James Version, Tommy, you don't have 62, do you? In the King James Version, the word when or while is not in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. It is true. I think everybody in the audience can look at that and tell though that is the idea. Every woman that prayeth or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. Can you see that the idea there is that every woman that prayeth or, when she prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head? Can you see that? Remember Esther 6, verse 12? It didn't say when or while there either, did it? Esther 6, verse 12. Tommy, put up number 5 very quickly. Number 5 very quickly. It didn't say when or while he was mourning, did it? But you understood it that way, didn't you, Mr. Jenkins? Now, all I'm going to do is look at the passage here. Lower down, just look at the passage. And Mordecai came to give the king's gate, came in haste to his house, when or while he was mourning. Doesn't say that, and having his head covered. But Mr. Jenkins knew that the meaning of that was when he was mourning, or while he was mourning. Mr. Jenkins, why would you understand this to mean when or while, but you won't do the same thing in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5? I don't think you really believe that when or while is not the correct understanding of pray or prophesy in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. But you're making that argument. You can appear and be clear about that. Do you really believe that, or is it just sort of an argument supposing this were true? I want to know that, because here you understand that when or while is there, though it's not in the King James Version. Why wouldn't it be in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5? Now, what I want you to do now is notice that some other translations actually have when, the word when or while in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. I don't have the transparency with me back at the house, at the Bensmiller's house. The New American Standard Version says, every man who has something on his head, verse 4, while praying or prophesying, disgraces his head. It has the word while. New American Standard, verse 4. All of these are of verse 4. Kenneth West, every man while praying or prophesying. J.A. Robertson, a man who wears a veil when praying or prophesying. Ronald Knox, and where is any man who keeps his head covered when he prays. The New Testament modern speech, a man who wears a veil, when praying or prophesying. Berkeley Version, any man who has his head covered, while praying or prophesying. TC Version 1901, any man who keeps his head covered, when publicly praying or preaching. Mr. Jenkins, are all these translations just wrong? Next thing I want to do is make an argument from the Greek to show that the meaning there is when or while, and not what kind of woman, as Mr. Jenkins presented in their last debate. An opponent says that 1 Corinthians 11 verse 5 is not talking about a woman when she is praying or prophesying, but he says that it just means a praying or prophesying woman. He means by that a woman who characteristically prays, not a woman when she is praying. The Greek does not bear this out. What I'm going to say is that the Greek shows that even though it doesn't have the word when or while, when it says praying or prophesying, that's really the meaning. And we saw that from the other translations. Listen to this carefully, and Tommy and Rick will be able to correct me if I'm wrong on this. In 1 Corinthians 11, verses 4 and 5, praying and prophesying are participles, which are verbal adjectives. Participles can be found in the predicate or attributive position. A participle is in the predicate position when an article does not precede it. In the predicate position when an article does not precede it. In the predicate position, a participle tells when the action of the verb takes place. Notice the word when. A participle is in the attributive position when an article does precede it. In the attributive position, a participle modifies the noun and tells what kind, like a praying woman, like we said in the last debate. Praying and prophesying in 1 Corinthians 11, 4 and 5 are in the predicate position. No article precedes them. Therefore, they are not describing what kind of man or woman, but instead are telling when the shame takes place. And now another point. Also, some commentators, for example, Robertson and Plummer in the ICC series, refer to the participial use in 1 Corinthians 11, 4 and 5 as a temporal participle, which is a circumstantial participle, telling the time when the shame takes place. I got somebody I know back in Alabama who knows the Greek very well to help me with that, and I believe that's the truth of the matter. The Greek bears it out that when or while is a correct understanding of the passage. Other translations show that, and but most importantly, I think you can look at your King James Version and see that. Even though it does not have the word when or while, you can see that's the meaning of it, every man praying or prophesying. Obviously, the meaning is when or while. And that gets back to this fact. That gets back to this fact. What is the occasion? What is the occasion here? Is it all the time, or is it when the man prays or prophesies? That's easy to see. Really, the debate comes down to that. He says he agrees with my argument on Haman, and we just disagree on the occasion. He says the occasion for the woman to be covered, or the man to be uncovered, is all the time. If you look at 4 and 5, the Bible says that she should be covered praying or prophesying. And I would understand that to mean when praying or prophesying. What about you? I think it's easy to see. You know, the truth of it is, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5, you see the phrase, every woman that prayeth or prophesying? Mr. Jenkins doesn't think there's any real significance to that phrase. Do you see that? He thinks the woman has to be covered all the time. The Bible says, every woman that prayeth or prophesieth with her head uncovered dishonors her head. Mr. Jenkins' position would be just as true as if it read this way. Every woman who has her head covered dishonors her head. And just take out the praying or prophesying part. Do you see his position means that phrase has no real significance? I want to know, why did Paul say praying or prophesying if it doesn't make any difference as my opponent in effect contends? According to his view, there is no real significance to these phrases in verse 4, 5, and also in verse 13. No real significance. He could just take out praying or prophesying verse 4, take out praying or prophesying verse 5, and then you could take out the phrase pray in verse 13, and Mr. Jenkins' position would still be the same. No real significance to those phrases. Do you believe that? I certainly don't. Then Mr. Jenkins admitted, and I'm glad that he did, that purpose is not always equal to when, all the time. Okay then, Mr. Jenkins, then you don't have a point. Unless you believe that the when is always equal to the purpose, you don't have a point, because you were in the last debate and your speech of tonight trying to use that as proof that the covering should be done all the time. But it's stating that the purpose is all the time, but now you said that the when does not always equal the purpose. Therefore, you have no proof that when is all the time. The when of the thing is not all the time. In other words, your argument on purpose will not prove anything. Will not prove anything because you've admitted that that's only true some of the time. And that's what I agree with, some of the time. He is assuming then in this passage that purpose equals when. We read the purpose, it's objection. He says, but now when does not always equal purpose. I agree with that. Therefore, we don't know, according to his proof, that the when here is all the time, do we? We don't know, unless you just assume that when equals purpose in this passage. We'll remember this tomorrow night because that's really an affirmative argument for him. You remember tomorrow night, if you're here tomorrow night, if he brings this up as an affirmative argument, that the win equals the purpose, and the purpose is equal to subjection, therefore the win is whenever a woman is in subjection to a man all the time, you remember he's already admitted that win does not necessarily equal the purpose. So even if the purpose is subjection, and I agree to that, that does not mean that the win is each time she's in subjection. The truth of the matter is the passage makes it so clear, the occasion. He's agreed my proposition is true, we just disagree on the occasion. The passage makes it so clear what the occasion is. Just read verse 4 and 5. Praying and prophesying. That is so clear. Look at it in your own Bible. Can you see where I'm arguing from? Did I just make that up? Can everybody see that those phrases in 4 and 5 and 13 show the occasion when the woman ought to be covered? I believe anybody can see that. Anybody can see that. And then he made the argument that long hair was mentioned 7 times. Robert, did you hold my time a second? You gave me those questions about this.
I gave you.
Yeah, hear that. Hear that.
The ones you asked me.
Yeah, that's right. Start with time, though. Sorry about that. He mentioned toward the end of his speech that long hair is mentioned in the passage 7 times. Well, as a matter of fact, number 68, Tom, you don't have that either. That long hair is only mentioned in the passage 2 times in verses 14 and 15. It's not mentioned 7 times, nor necessarily implied anywhere else. Then you have terms like shorn or shaven, but that's not long hair. It's mentioned 2 times in verses 14 and 15. But he acted like, well, maybe he didn't act like that. I don't say that. He mentioned that the long hair was mentioned 7 times, and I guess that doesn't prove anything because I've already asked him this question. Does the hair is referred to 7 times in 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16 prove by itself that the cataclutho covers is long hair? And he answered it no. So for whatever reason, he brought up the fact that long hair is mentioned 7 times in this passage. It doesn't prove his position because when I asked him if it proved his position, he said no. He said no. The truth of the matter is that long hair is only mentioned twice. Now, hair is mentioned 7 times. Hair is mentioned 7 times. But you know, if I guess it, the fact that hair is mentioned 7 times proves that the cataclutho covering is the head, then I guess really the hair is the man because the word man is mentioned 14 times. That's twice as many as the hair is mentioned. Man is mentioned 14 times. So just the fact that it's mentioned 7 times proves it's the covering, then the word man's in there 14 times. So it's the covering. Man's the covering. No, woman's in there 16 times. You know that, Mr. Jenkins? The word woman is in there 16 times. And so if the fact that the hair is mentioned 7 times proves that the cataclutho covering is the hair, then really we've determined that the cataclutho covering is the woman because it's mentioned 16 times. You say, Pat, that's absurd. You have to look at the relation of those words in the context of the covering. And I respond, exactly. Exactly. As a matter of fact, my opponent would agree with me. He would admit that every verse in 1 Corinthians 11, 2 through 16, every verse that mentions the cataclutho covering, and if that verse also refers to the hair, teaches that that covering is different than that length of hair that it's referred to. So the verses in the passage that actually mention the cataclutho covering and the hair in the same verse are saying that they're different. Look at 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5. It talks about the cataclutho covering. It says if a woman doesn't have that when she prays, that's even all one as if she were shaven. In other words, it's just as bad as if she were shaven. Mentions the length of hair. Is it saying that the cataclutho covering is like that or the same as this length of hair? No, it's saying it's different than that. This is just as bad as that. Cheating on your taxes is just as bad as robbing a bank. That shows that cheating on your taxes and robbing a bank are two different things, but they're being compared. One's just as bad as the other. It's absurd to think that just because two things are mentioned in the same passage, that means that two things are the same. Mark 16:16 mentions both belief and baptism. Does that prove that belief and baptism are the same thing? 2 Timothy 1:5 mentions both Lois and Eunice. Does that mean that they're the same people, just the fact that they're mentioned in the same verse or the same passage? The number of times something is referred to is essentially irrelevant. The number of times something is referred to is essentially irrelevant. The veil is proven, not just referred to, it's proven 3 times by the phrase pray or prophesy, verses 5, 6, and 13. That is what is relevant. Okay, Tommy, put up number 6. I want to show you another argument. I want to show you that the time regulation on the covering is different. For example, let me go to the vegetable garden thing because I don't have enough time. Does 1 Corinthians 11, verse 5 require the cataclutho covering the woman's in the vegetable garden? No. Is it required for verse 16 for the long hair? Yes. Therefore, you see the two coverings are different.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start where he left off and look my notes as I go back with him, work back toward the front of the speech. He says the veil is proven three times by prayer prophesied, but the fact that hair is referred to seven times and specifically mentioned two times doesn't prove anything. I understood his assumption. I didn't see his proof. I call upon you to ask yourself the question, does the fact that the veil is mentioned three times prove praying and prophesying? The truth is, the veil is not mentioned eight times. A calupto covering is mentioned a few times, but a calupto covering is any kind of covering. It can be the waves of the sea, a bushel covering a candle, love covering sins. The context determines what it is. Now what we want you to do is to go to context and give us a contextual study and show us where the calupto covering in this context is a veil. That I haven't been able to get you to do. It says veil is mentioned three times, just isn't so. Then he said, every verse that mentions the covering says it's different than the hair specified. Well, naturally it does. When he says there's shorn hair and there's shaved hair and there's hair that covers, naturally shorn hair and shaved hair aren't the same. Naturally they're different. Hair that covers, different than shorn hair, shaved hair, or hair cut like mine. The fact that they're different means absolutely nothing for his position or for mine. He said long hair is not inferred seven times, but I believe that it is, and you will have to decide for yourself and come to your own conclusion. It's mentioned two times specifically, and if some kind of covering is in contrast with shaven or shorn, you're going to have to look at the context to tell what that calupto covering is. And the calupto covering better fits a covering that is different than shorn or shaven hair, that is long hair, and that's the difference in the hair length, than shorn or shaven hair fits a veil. That's why I believe the calupto is the hair and not the veil. He said, Jacob said, when is only true some of the time, and that I did say. And he said, well, I built my whole argument in the previous debate on the fact that that wasn't so. I didn't know what I was arguing. In fact, didn't understand one, because I didn't know I built my whole argument on that. I think I've always recognized that. My argument is that in this context, he's telling the woman that she is to be covered because she's the glory of man. He mentions a specific time when she prays or prophesies, just like he told the man to be forgiving, and he did use the word when there when he prayed, but it didn't limit it to that when. I don't know how, when the word when is there, he can say it doesn't limit it to the time specified. In the passage where the word when's not there, it says that it's limited to the word, to the time that is specified. I've already shown that she's to be covered when she prays, when she prophesies, and she's to be covered when she's the glory of man. I've shown that from this context. And I believe you'll be able to see that. He says that he wants to give some translations that have when or why, and I'd hazard a guess that 99% of you never heard of one of those translations. You've heard of the New American Standard. That's probably the only one. But you know what was strange? After he used those translations and asked me if I was saying they're all wrong, he turned right around and said, the Greek does not have when or while there. So if the Greek doesn't have when or while there, yes, those translations supply something that are in the Greek. And you just admitted that it was. He made an argument on the Greek and said that the tense of the participle and things of that nature proved that it was when or why. Pat told us in Alabama he didn't know anything about Greek. Tried to make an argument that his moderator gave him. I tried to answer with an argument that Rick gave me. He made a mess of it, and I got up and made a mess of it, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'm surprised that you did. If I knew the Greek and could prove it to you, because you know the Greek, it wouldn't prove a thing to these people. I think a man by the name of Lowell Williams has a better knowledge of the Greek than any man I've ever met. That's just my judgment. And Lowell Williams said that it's foolish for a man to use Greek to try to prove a point to an English-speaking audience that doesn't know Greek. That's what a Greek scholar, though Lowell wouldn't count himself a Greek scholar, he's too modest. That's what a fellow that knows the Greek in and out and has taught it for years says about it. And it's also passing strange that Lowell Williams, who knows Greek so well, and knows whether the participle would prove an artificial covering or not, read a tract that I wrote several years ago, went home and argued them, and has re-argued them, and has re-argued them, and has told me I've gotten the truth on it. So evidently, the Greek doesn't prove it. Pat doesn't know the Greek, and I don't. He's making an argument he knows nothing about. I can't answer it, but I'm competitive. But Lord Williams, who knows the Greek, agrees with it. We've got a man in the building tonight that's just about as good in the Greek as Lord, and he agrees with me and not Pat, so he doesn't think it necessarily improves. Talk about the Greek all you want. That's all I'm going to say about it, because I don't want to say anything about it. That's evidence that you were wrong in saying the Greek does prove it. All right. He said, why do you understand that Haman had the covering on for the occasion, but not in 1 Corinthians 11 and 5? You've already admitted that Haman is not parallel to 1 Corinthians 11 and 5, Pat. Why do you keep using it? You said that Haman was covered only for the occasion, and the purpose of his covering was the occasion. You say that's not so in 1 Corinthians 11 and 5, so you're using a passage that you've already kicked out. And this audience knows you've already kicked it out. The reason I believe Haman was covered when he mourned is because he was covered because he was mourning. And the reason I believe the woman is to be covered when she's the glory of man is because she's the glory of man. He said, Mark 11:25, he said, but I said Mark 11:25 wasn't temporary. If I did, I didn't intend to say that. I know you know Mark 11:25 is talking about a temporary thing, and I do too. I may have said it, I didn't mean to say that. Mark 11:25 is mentioning a temporary thing when you're praying. But the admonition is extended beyond that, and you do recognize that forgive is extended beyond that. Just so in 1 Corinthians 11, praying is a specific occasion and temporary occasion, but the thing commanded extends beyond that, just like it does in Mark 11:25, and to the occasion of her being the glory of man. He said, could a woman with short hair pray before her hair grew long if she repented of having short hair? I'll have to leave that to God. Then he said, can a woman who has short hair get long hair to pray? And he said, if a woman had short hair today, could she have long hair tomorrow? No, if a woman had short hair today at granddad's, I wouldn't tell her to have long hair which went to Aunt Martha's tomorrow. I wouldn't look kind of absurd, but go up to a woman that has short hair today and say, now then be sure you have long hair tomorrow when you ride your bicycle. When you said you told them to have long hair when you ride your bicycle, have long hair when you go to granddad's today and Aunt Martha's tomorrow, she didn't have short hair. And so you got in trouble and had to try to alter your argument. It'd be foolish to tell a woman that has short hair today to have long hair tomorrow when you go to Aunt Martha's. No, I wouldn't tell her that. I'd tell a woman that she's to have long hair when she rides her bicycle, when she goes to granddad's or Aunt Martha's, or when she prays, because her long hair is a token of her subjection to man and that she is honoring him. He says, the fact that the passage says pray or prophesy doesn't fit Mr. Jenkins' position. Well, yes, it does. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Every woman that prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. Every man praying or prophesying could mean every man who is a praying or a prophesying man. It doesn't say when praying or prophesying. If I said every woman praying with a heart defiled dishonors her Lord, would that mean that she's only dishonoring her Lord while praying? Just so every woman praying with her head uncovered dishonors her Lord, doesn't mean she's dishonoring her Lord only while praying. And furthermore, if I said every woman praying undefiled, I mean praying with a defiled heart, dishonors her Lord, it wouldn't mean that the only time she has a defiled heart is when she's praying. And when I say every woman praying with her head uncovered, doesn't mean that that's the only time that she has her head uncovered. He builds his argument on a word that's not in the context, and he's already said it's not in the Greek, so I don't need to belabor that. So praying or prophesying does fit my position. He's telling a woman that she cannot pray to God and her prayer be accepted if she does not have the token of subjection on her head that is commanded in this passage, and that passage is the long hair that is the glory to her. And a man cannot honor his head, which is Christ, if he prays or prophesies or does anything else with long hair on his head that would make him look like a woman or feminine. He then referred to the consistency argument and referred to Jeremiah and said that the Ethiopian changing his spot fit the Calvinist position better than it did his position in the debate. Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm going to give it to him for argument's sake. What you did in that debate, I hope, is was go to plain passages and show him where his application of the leopard can't change his spot and the Ethiopian can't change his skin does not prove the impossibility of apostasy, because passages said ye did fall from grace. Galatians 5:4, take heed lest you fall. That shows he's wrong. Instead of trying to find things to lead away from the point, come to the point, Pat, and do what I've tried to get you to, such as introduce this argument, and that is go to the text and show as plainly from the text that an artificial covering is there, and it's behead when and only when a woman's praying, as you would have shown that Calvinist that the Ethiopian can't change his skin or a leopard his spot doesn't mean the impossibility of apostasy. Or you would show the Baptist that his view that a man can be saved out on the desert or on the battlefield without baptism is not correct. I want to look at one of the questions he asked me again tonight, because he made reference to that. Does the fact that hair is referred to seven times in 1 Corinthians 11, 12 through 16 prove the idea that the catalupto covering is long hair? And I answered no. The fact that it's referred to seven times doesn't necessarily prove got the covering of long hair. But it is a pointer with much more strength than the fact that an artificial covering is not referred to a single time. And then when we look at the whole context, and Pat's fond of these kind of questions, the other debate, he asked me, does verse 5 alone prove it? Does verse 6 alone prove it? Does verse 15 alone prove it? When I answered no to each of those questions, he said, if verse 5 doesn't prove it, verse 16 doesn't prove it, 15 doesn't prove it, verse 6 doesn't prove it, then what does prove it? Well, the whole context proves it. And that's what we're going to do now, look at the context. Woman is to be in subjection to man, and she's to have a token of that subjection on her head, token showing that she's in subjection to man. Pat agrees with that. He says that just illustrates the covering. That's not the point. And I've tried to get him to go to context and prove his contention, and he hasn't done that yet. And his proving time is just about over. Paul, for 9 verses, talked about a covering. That a man is not to hell and a woman is to hell. And then he asked the question about the woman being covered. And this is how he answered. Judging yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray to God uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have a veil, it's a shame to him, but if a woman have a veil, it's a glory to her, for her veil is given her for a covering? You say, wait a minute. If it read that way, I wonder if Pat and you would conclude that the veil was the covering he had been talking about for the previous 9 verses? I think I can guarantee you, if it read that way, Pat would have been reading it in every speech. He wouldn't have been dodging the context like he has been if it read that way. And I would be very foolish to deny the veil was the covering if it read that way. Listen, does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have a veil, it's a shame to him, but if a woman have a veil, it's a glory to her, for a veil is given her for a covering? After talking about a covering without identifying it for 9 verses. And I say, oh no, Paul, you haven't been talking about a veil, you've been talking about long hair. Even though long hair had already been mentioned or referred to 4 times, I still look foolish, said Paul, you weren't talking about a veil up here. Because when Paul got down to answering a question about a woman being covered, he said she ought to be covered with long hair. But if it said with a veil, you can bet Pat would really be making hay out of that, and I would have given in or given up, and we would have agreed and already gone home. Let me show you what it does say. Judging yourselves, is it comely that a woman pray to God uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame to him? And I'm still wanting him to tell us about woman naturally having long hair and men can't naturally have long hair. But if a woman has long hair, it's a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. You don't need to know there are 2 different Greek words. You don't need to know anything about Greek participles. All you need to do is look at the context, and you see that he has said that a woman is in subjection to man, and she is to show she's in subjection to man, to honor her head because she's his clothing, because she was created for man, whatever it means, because of the angels. She's to have this token on her head that is enjoined. And then he asked a question about her having this token on her head and said her long hair is given her for a covering. I doubt if there's ever been such confusion on this had it not been for the fact that the American Standard and some others translated Gotikalupto Plan. Whether that be the case or not, you can see that when Paul talks about a covering for all these verses, ask a question about a woman being covered. Please note, I said he asked a question about a woman being covered. He answered that question about a woman being covered by saying that a man is not to have the covering of long hair. Well, he had just said it, verse 5, that a woman's not to be covered, and in verse 7, a man's not to be covered. And he said a woman is to be covered with long hair, and he had just said in verse 6 and in verse 7 that a woman is to be covered. How could it be plainer? That long hair which a woman is to have all time is the covering that he's been talking about throughout verses 3 through 15.
Now Pat will have a 10-minute rejoinder.
Get the rope. 10 minutes.
Thank you.